Chapter 12. Staccato in the Middle. We sprint across the school grounds, leading a pack of confused, horrified, puppy-craving students behind us. The maestro's dorm, Clarion House, isn't far now, and behind it waits Mrs. LaRue's cottage. I hope the headmaestro isn't home. If she answers the door, we are well and truly doomed. "Don't stop!" Darby gasps out. "Don't look back!" We round the maestro's dorm and go full tilt toward the echo trees. Just inside the forest's bounds sits a little yellow cottage with blue shutters, as pretty as a fairy tale. Darby reaches the door first and pounds on it. A wind chime made of metal music notes tinkles by the front window. Many of the students have given up and turned back, but Claudia and a dozen others close in, looking determined. "Come on, Miss Mott," I mutter. "Be home, please." "Amelia Jones," Claudia shouts. "Let us see that puppy." At that moment, the cottage door opens and Miss Mott blinks at us. "What the? Help!" I cry. Bewildered, Miss Mott steps back, holding the door open, and Darby and I jump inside. Claudia steps away when Miss Mott blocks her. "Sorry, private meeting," she says, then shuts the door. Darby and I stand panting and red-faced in her living room. Out of nowhere, a ball of white fuzz comes streaking across the floor. It launches itself at me, yipping, and I shriek and clutch Jai. "Janet!" Miss Mott grabs the fuzz ball and snuggles it. "Down, girl. What have I told you about manners?" The squirming, wiry-haired thing turns out to be an actual puppy, or rather, a dog. It pants happily in Miss Mott's arms, its eyes hidden behind a fluff of hair. "Janet, calm down. Girls, what on earth brings you here?" The cottage interior certainly has Mrs. LaRue's style. Portraits of famous historical maestros hang on the wall, and the furniture is all immaculate velvet and polished dark wood. A record player in the corner sings out the resonant trumpeting notes of Louis Armstrong, one of the great jazz maestros. I know this one. It's an elemental spell that conjures clouds, though the recording itself emits no magic, of course. An upright piano is decorated with pictures of Mrs. LaRue and her late husband at their wedding, and a few with her and Miss Mott when they were little, dressed in matching overalls and braided pigtails. Atop a fringed ottoman, Mrs. LaRue's music cat, Wink, watches the dog with a look of loathing, her fur bristling. But there are signs of Miss Mott around, too, like a tie-dyed tapestry and jasmine incense held by a bronze monkey figurine. The smell fills the cottage, sweet and a little heady. And, of course, there's Janet, who jumps down and starts scratching her ear. In response, Wink leaps to a shelf, hissing indignantly. "Well, Amelia?" Miss Mott asks, looking amused. "Will I get an explanation?" "First," I say, still breathless, "I want to ask if you meant what you said at our first lesson, about how there are no rules in composing class." She tilts her head, the beads in her hair clinking. "Is that how I worded it?" "Did you mean it?" "I never say what I don't mean, Amelia. But, okay, good. Just remember that, please. Because we, well," unsure how to explain, I give up and open the sweater in my arms, revealing Jai in all his cherubic glory. "Ah," she says, seemingly robbed of words. "Aha! Oh, my. My, my, my. Remember, no rules in composing, so technically we didn't break any." I push baby Jai into her arms. "Please say you can fix him." "It wasn't my fault," Darby adds. And then we're both talking at once, spilling out the tale in jumbled bits. "I was just trying to..." And then boom, magic everywhere. "And he peed. Don't know what went wrong." "Both of you just take a breath," says Miss Mott, putting the baby to her shoulder and patting his bum. He grabs one of her beaded dreadlocks and giggles. On the floor, Janet wiggles in an obvious fit of jealousy. "There, there, little one. I have to admit, I didn't think this would be in my job description. Amelia, what happened? I tell her about our idea to do a time spell at the Composium. How I wanted to find the person who stole my mom's spells, and how it all went sideways fast. She nods as she listens, studying my face carefully as if looking for any secrets I might be holding back. What do we do now? I ask helplessly. Well, she replies, we wait. I flinch. For him to grow up? Dear me, no. It's not transformation magic, which is permanent, but time magic, which usually fades on its own. If we wait a bit, then, poof, Jai will be himself once more. A pity, really, What cheeks? She pinches his wobbly jowls. Baby Jai jibber-jabbers back, staring at her adoringly. So what you're saying is, Darby frowns, we can't sell Amelia's spell as a kind of immortality magic and become mega-zillionaires? I stare incredulously at her. That's what you're worried about? It crossed my mind. No one will be selling any spells, Miss Mott says. Why don't you girls sit in here while we wait for the magic to wear off? My sister is away from meetings all day, and this little handsome man needs some cleaning up. Don't you, my squishy bum, my googly goo. What a good boy. Darby makes a gagging sound, and I laugh weakly, imagining how we'll explain this to Jai later. Miss Mott disappears with the baby into another room, Janet tailing her. Cool, sweet relief floods my body as I realize he'll be okay. Only to be followed by the vivid memory of what I saw through my time spell. Shuddering, I pick up a book of music craft history from the coffee table and focus my attention on the pictures inside. But after a moment, I set it down again. You know, despite Jai turning into a baby and us almost getting blasted by magic, that was kind of fun, I say. Yeah, Darby laughs. Like old times. Before Mia, I think. An awkward silence falls. I know she must be thinking the same thing. Look, Amelia, the thing is, I say at the same time, I don't get why she's so possessive of you. I mean, I know you're best friends, and I don't want to come between you two, but what's she so scared of? Darby's forehead creases as she picks at a thread on her skirt. I don't know. She's been acting weird ever since she showed up, almost like she's hiding something. You know, she never talks about the shipwreck, or the island, or her mom. I suggested that she see the school counselor, and she practically went nuclear on me. She lifts her gaze to mine. But she's not a bad person, Amelia. I think she's just got a lot of stress and trauma under the surface. I nod, knowing she's right. What Mia went through is probably beyond anything I could imagine. But still, is it something I did? I ask, because it feels like this is personal, like it's mainly me she's angry at. Darby shrugs. I don't know. I hate being stuck in the middle of you two, believe me. I think maybe, but I never find out what Darby thinks, because at that moment, Mia herself appears, knocking sharply on the window, her face livid. A gentle snow has started falling outside, dusting her fuzzy pink coat and bare head. Darby and I jump. What do? I gasp. You stay here. I'll talk to her. With a grimace, Darby stands and goes to the door, unbolts it, and steps outside. I sit rigidly on the sofa, pretending to be absorbed in the history book, but I don't even have to strain to overhear their conversation. I had told you to stay away from her, Mia says. Amelia's my friend. You should take it easy on. I don't care, Darby. I don't want you hanging out with her, or talking to her, or even waving in the hallways. But why? Because she's not good enough for you, Darbs. Not good enough. Heat rushes over my skin. I sit up taller, my hands clenched on the book in my lap. Not good enough. And she's shady, Mia continues. You yourself told me about her black spell. Mia, you and I both know you've played one too. That was eons ago. And it was to save my poor Sir Fluffington, you know that. This is different. That girl is not like us. She's from a different kind of world. I heard she's even here as some kind of charity case. How in the world would she know about my scholarship? That was just between Mrs. LaRue and Gran. And since when does being poor make me a bad friend? Darby must realize that they're too loud, because she pulls Mia away and their voices fade. Does she stand up for me? If so, I never hear it. The rest of the next hour passes numbly. I lie back on Mrs. LaRue's fancy velvet sofa and try hard not to let the tears in my eyes fall. Wink hops up with me and curls against my chest, and I stroke his soft fur, making him purr, only to remember just in time that his purring has the power to make people fall asleep. I settle for hugging him instead, and amazingly, he lets me. Just when I thought maybe things could be normal again, that Darby and I could be friends and work things out with Mia, it has all fallen to pieces. At least I find the perfect distraction when Jai returns. Awkwardly, I try to stare at anything but my rumpled, slightly dazed friend leaning on Miss Mott. He's his normal size and age again, but he has a haunted look in his eyes, and he keeps twitching as if to be sure he's all there. "Where's your friend?" asks Miss Mott. "Oh, she had a thing. Is Jai all better?"
"We don't talk about this," he says hoarsely. "Ever, ever, ever, ever."
Miss Mott's eyes are amused, even though her lips are set in a firm line that makes her look a lot like her sister. "Do you remember anything?" I ask. "Like how you—"
"I said no talking about it," shouts Jai, his ears on fire. "And I remember bits and pieces. Like a really, really bad dream. Was Claudia there at some point?"
"Oh, right." I give a sheepish grin. "If anyone asks, tell them the puppy's fine and on his way to a nice farm in the country."
"There was a puppy." Jai's eyebrows draw together. "And I missed it."
Miserably, he pops his thumb into his mouth, then freezes, his expression turning to one of horror. He slowly extracts his thumb and stares at it.
"Ah, yes," Miss Mott says. "There may be some lingering effects for the next few days. You might find yourself mashing your peas before you eat them, and, craving milk more than usual."
Jai's eyes bulge.
"Well, I do believe it's dinner time." Miss Mott claps her hands. "Off with you, Sonny."
"Amelia, stay where you are. We need to talk."